Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer. So what's up with all this mold? Is it finding its way around our studio?
Well, actually, it's finding its way into this great magazine from Answers in Genesis called Answers. It's the spring issue 2013. Fred, this article on mold is so cool because mold is awfully smart.
Yeah. So wait a minute. We're going to talk about slimy mold as something that's an amazing part of God's creation.
Yes.
Wow.
And this mold is able to do engineering feats that some of the world's best paid engineers, Fred, we pay them a lot of money to figure out, you know, whether it's neural networks, computer networks, railroad networks, whatever kind of networks. You got to design them like cell phone networks.
Yeah, so you're talking about transportation networks, right?
Yeah, where the traffic load is very significant. Mm-hmm. We pay people a lot of money.
Absolutely.
And it often takes them weeks, months, or years to get a good design.
I wish the light rail system here in Denver, I wish they'd take some advice from some slime mold.
From some mold, because it turns out mold could do in about 24 hours what a team of engineers might take a few months to do.
Oh, at least a few months. And it can do it, what, 24 hours? We're
in
talking about slimy mold.
Hours. And Fred, this is not simply an article in a creation journal. Now, if it was, I love the creation magazines and journals we read, and I find the quality and the reliability of their information better than the science journals and science publications. But this comes from a secular journal, right?
Yeah, Science Magazine. I mean, that's one of the most prestigious secular evolutionist magazines out there, peer-reviewed journal.
Yeah, in 2010, they did this report. They took some common mold. In fact, it's Ficerum polycephalum.
Is that the kind you find on bread?
No, but it's the kind you find in Ficerum polycephalum.
Oh, that's what I thought.
Okay. And so this mold, Fred, they took a plain board, and on the board, they put food for mold kind of food,
okay.
Things that mold like to eat. And
cheeseburgers, fries.
Yes. And they scattered it around sort of like the population density of the greater Tokyo area in Japan. And then in the middle, they put some mold. This is the kind of seek and consume mold that has astonished engineers and scientists, because within 24 hours, it built a complex network as efficient as Tokyo's rail system.
Yeah, it pretty much mirrored their current system, right? It followed the paths of least resistance. Kind of what these engineers have come up with is the best routes to design this transportation system. And the mold did it in 24 hours. So, hey, you know, if you're a transportation engineer and you want to really impress your boss, you don't tell him, but you set up this big map at your house and you have this mold do all the work for you. Yeah. And in 24 hours, you come back to your boss. I've got a solution.
And Fred, some people listening might think it's a trivial problem. And that would be because they don't know. They haven't tried to do the engineering of a network. But you need to figure out, you know, traffic densities and flows and alternative routes, a fault-tolerant system.
Terrain.
And it has to be done well so that it's an efficient use of resources. Well, they are finding out, and I think it's beyond just Tokyo where this research has been done.
Well, yeah, that's right. I read about that they did the same thing in Spain and Portugal. Similar experiment. And sure enough, it created the mold in a very short period of time, created a transportation system. You know, it followed the paths that matched very closely the transportation network that they had already established years ago.
So what's going on here is the mold is made up of single-celled organisms, a kind of amoeba.
Yeah.
And these creatures are able to communicate, and they send out these long tentacles. It reminds me, Fred, of the show we did on the bees. Remember that these honeybees, they think faster than a supercomputer?
Yeah, much faster.
Well, we should talk about that a little later in the show. Mm-hmm. And also, it reminds me of ants This is another brand new study that ants use math to find the fastest route to food.
That's right. Not necessarily a direct route, but it'll be a faster route. That'll be fun to talk about that.
Faster than the direct route.
That's right.
Right?
And we'll talk. Yeah, that's going
to
be cool.
So we'll get to that first.
But let's get back to slime.
Okay. This is a common kind of mold. What it does is it surveys basically the terrain. It figures out what it needs, and then it begins to build this astounding transportation network with a brilliant design.
Yeah. When they locate a nutrient, these tendrils, with the shortest and most efficient path, they tend to thicken, while the ones that aren't finding an efficient path, they pull back.
Right. And so the engineers and the scientists who have studied this, now there's a name for this kind of research. It's called biomimetics.
Biomimetics? It's not slimimetics?
Where engineers, they look at God's design and they see how brilliant it is. And they say, you know, if we take advantage of this, we'll all get pay raises because we could do our job better.
Yeah.
And it's in everything from the latest optics, just everything.
Yeah,
and so
you put your schedule together. Like, you know, as an engineer, we have to put a schedule together. The design phase, it depends on the design. But transportation is going to be, like you said, at least a month, maybe two. Hmm. And you can really impress your boss by coming in the next day. Hey, I'm done.
Yeah. So they're arguing. And you could go to not only the journal Science, but other publications. And they're saying, hey, we are not kidding about this. We are recommending that engineers use slime in order to initially lay out their networks. They're talking about power grids, communication networks, highways. If you want efficient new design, you then let the mold do the work overnight, and you come in the morning and you've got at least a starting point that might end up being your finishing point because it worked with the Tokyo rail system. In 24 hours, they got the design right, the mold.
Yeah, the mold did. And what, you know, again, a testimony to everything in God's creation is so cool.
Fred, my wife Cheryl and I saw a special. It was about the Sahara Desert. And a segment in it was on the dung beetle. And the dung beetle, I haven't spent much of my life studying or thinking about a dung beetle. Have you?
I have not spent a lot of time thinking about a dung beetle.
No. They make their livelihood by finding the droppings from some other animal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a beetle. It looks like a beetle. It goes up to this dung pile, and it gets a little tiny chunk of it, and it starts to roll it away. And as it rolls it away, it sort of covers with sand, and it wants to get it far enough away that some other predator is not going to come and steal it or whatever.
Do you think Disney will make a movie on the dung beetle?
Probably. What the researchers wondered was, how does it keep going away when it loses sight of the pile of dung? Why doesn't it just sort of circle back around like it doesn't know where it's going?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's nighttime. It could just be going in circles, but it doesn't. It's very reliable at getting away, and again, in an efficient manner. Some brilliant researcher had some insight. He said dung beetle is navigating the way sailors do on the high seas. Maybe the beetle is navigating by the stars.
By the stars.
Now that sounds, doesn't it sound crazy?
Well, actually, knowing how God is, no. But yeah, for most people, it probably would.
Yeah, right. If it was evolution, it sounds crazy. But it's God who created these amazing creatures. And so they took dung beetles into a planetarium. And they put sand on the ground, and they brought in the requisite dung. The dung beetle starts doing its thing. It takes a little bit of dung, starts rolling it away. And because it's a planetarium, they could manipulate the night sky. And so they turn the night sky, the stars, they rotate them, and the dung beetle is going in a circle. It doesn't know where to go.
They only did that just to have fun and, you know, like you take your magnifying glass on ants.
Right.
Just boys having fun there at the planetarium.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Fred, God is so amazing.
Oh, that is.
The lowly dung beetle navigating by the stars.
Lowly dung beetle and slimy mold making maps. Oh. You know what? Did you hear about the slime who hit the other slime and took off running?
No.
The other slime said, I'll get you next slime. Oh. I don't know if this show will be able to, you know, repeat on the air, Bob, because the FCC is just going to cut it off because of all the slime.
Well, we have tried for many years to abide by the FCC regulations.
Okay, well, this one's going to really push the limits.
And we've only been sued once, right, in all these years?
Yeah,
well, you and I.
Just once.
Yeah, we were sued once. And we lived to tell about it. All right, so, Fred, this does remind me, this story of the slime mold reminds me of the show we did on the bees thinking faster than a supercomputer. And also, it reminds me of the latest study out. People could read about this at Live Science. We'll put a link to this at our website, realscienceradio.com. There's a shortcut we have now, rsr.org. So it's real easy to get to. Somebody could go to rsr.org.
Sounds like a property on Monopoly.
Yeah, that's right. rsr.org/bees, for example, will get you to the show we did a couple of years ago that bees think faster than a supercomputer. And it turns out they do. And now there's a study out showing that ants use math to find the fastest route.
Yeah, this one's really cool. I mean, there's this principle called Fermat's principle.
Yeah.
Where you find the shortest time to get to somewhere. It's not necessarily the shortest distance.
Oh, now, okay, let me understand that. Fermat's principle, if you want to get somewhere, you think going the shortest distance will get you there the quickest. But it turns out that's not always true.
Well, that's
right?
Not always true. There could be a building in the way. Or I like the analogy here in the article of a lifeguard. A smart lifeguard, if he's got to go out and rescue somebody out in the water, if he takes a straight path to him, it may not be the quickest route. He should go to
Of the ocean currents,
because
right?
The currents, the water, you can't swim as fast in water as you can run down the beach. So he should run down the beach to the point where he's now closest to the person out in the water instead of taking a direct path.
Right.
And that's Fermat's principle.
And so that's not necessarily immediately intuitive. You have to think about it for a while before you come up with that understanding so that you could fulfill Fermat's principle.
Yeah.
And get there sooner.
That's right. And so, you know, you've got scientists studying these ants, and they've created these different surfaces, like a glass surface, which is smooth, and different felt surfaces, different layers of, you know, different thickness of felt.
Like a fine felt, a thicker felt.
Yeah, exactly.
Where it's easier or harder to get across the surface based on the terrain, so to speak.
And invariably, the ants would pick, guess which surface?
The quickest surface to cross.
Yeah, which would be the glass surface.
Complying with Fermat's principle.
Now, of course, that glass was probably flat. If it was, you know, at an angle, then they'd slide down. I guess you'd get there really quick if it was.
Yeah, right. I've done that on a 14er hike.
Oh, coming have you?
Down the mountain. It took us like 12 hours to get to the summit, and it took us about 20 minutes to get back down because we slid most of the way in Chaffee County, Colorado. But, Fred, these ants, in other words, when they're trying to get to the food, now they're not going to take the direct route. Because the direct route would take them longer.
Turns out it'll take them longer. They find the shortest time, not distance, time to get there.
And that's another example of God's brilliant design in an ant, in this lowly creature of an ant.
Yeah, and how do they do it? I mean, they don't have a GPS. Do they have a GPS on their bodies, on their person?
Sea turtles
sure do. Sea turtles do.
And they're birds that fly across the Pacific, right? And there's the monarch butterfly. That goes to the same little forest neighborhood in Mexico. I think you're right. These ants, they're just this simple, tiny, well, we call them simple.
Yeah.
Imagine if an atheist had to make an ant.
Good luck.
Right? I don't know how many cells. We have tens of trillions of cells in a human body. I don't know if ants have billions of cells. I don't know the number.
Yeah.
Millions, a billion. Just one cell in an ant.
I'd be impressed with just one organelle within a cell.
Yeah, good point. And so it's also wildly complicated. And to think that ants can do this, and then we get to enjoy God's design. You know, so much money is spent on science. And I'd like to make another Real Science Radio prediction, Fred, right here and now, that as the evidence from astronomy and physics and chemistry and biology, geology, as it increasingly affirms the biblical worldview and creation and a young earth and a young universe, governments are going to begin to spend less money on science, on original research, for political reasons that they just are no longer excited in the outcome.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's interesting.
That's a prediction. Because we have benefited from the hatred of God. You know, the Bible says what they meant for evil, God used for good.
Mm-hmm. Here's right? a good example.
Remember with Joseph? Yeah. Well, they have spent billions of dollars on this original research because they think it's going to affirm that it backfires every time.
Oh, constantly.
What a wonderful time to be a Christian, to be a creationist, to be a pro-lifer.
Oh, absolutely. As an engineer, and you're looking at grand engineer and how much better he does it.
And we're living in the Bible days. You know, some Christians think, oh, if only I had lived in the Bible. These are the Bible days.
Yeah.
I mean, the New Testament, it incorporates this day that we're living in.
Yes.
And so God's brilliance is there for us to share with our neighbors. If you have somebody who you know likes to think about God, is there a God, creation, somebody who needs their faith to be bolstered, then please share with him. Send him an email or a tweet, whatever that is. Send him a tweet. Put it on Facebook, realscienceradio.com, and that you enjoyed today's show and invite somebody to listen. And that helps the show grow, of course.
It does. And people love to talk about origins. They really do.
Yeah.
It's easy to get into a conversation with
a
non-believer about the topic of origins.
Yeah.
And once they have that foundation in place and they start to believe, hey, there is a creator God, that there is this mass intelligence, this supreme being, then they're more open to the gospel.
A transcendent being who could conceive all this brilliance and then implement it. And so, Fred, I think that we have benefited by the billions spent on real research, and it shows the glory of God. But they have thought it was going to show that Darwin was right.
Yeah. And boy, your prediction, I think it's going to come about. I haven't heard of that before.
Yeah.
Okay, Bob. So to navigate back to these ants, there's this interesting thing of how they rely on trails of pheromones. So you want to talk about pheromones? You know anything about pheromones?
Yeah. Well, we mentioned on a recent show the difference between hormones and pheromones. A hormone is a signal within an organism between two organs or between two glands, for example, like from the pituitary gland to how much your bones should grow, for example. Whereas a pheromone is a chemical signal, same kind of chemicals, but it's a chemical signal to another organism. So in a woman who's pregnant, as her single-celled little boy or girl, it's a boy or a girl at the first cell, as that little boy or girl is coming down her fallopian tube toward her uterus, toward her womb, it's releasing the baby's first cry to say, Mom, I'm here and I'm hungry. Please get ready to feed me. And that's a pheromone.
Hmm.
And the reason we know it's a pheromone is because that single-celled embryo that's now growing as a larger and larger embryo, a blastocyst and a fetus, that's not an organ. That embryo is not an organ of the mother. It's not a gland. It is a separate organism. And so because it's not one of the mother's glands, because it's not an organ, it is an organism. Therefore, the signal is from one organism to another, to its mom. And so many animals in the animal kingdom, I think even trees, use chemical signals to communicate with each other.
And that's what a pheromone is.
That's what a pheromone is. So somehow, Fred, these ants, they begin randomly because they go out in the morning foraging for food. They don't know, you know, they're just out looking and they leave these pheromone trails, but there's this system of reinforcement and feedback, and the ants end up fulfilling this Fermat's principle, which is astounding.
They find
design.
The optimum route over time.
Yeah, that's really fun. So remember we talked about the bees?
Yeah.
Bees think faster than a supercomputer.
Yeah, it's the traveling salesman problem.
Right, exactly. How does the bee know how to get to the most flowers looking for pollen in the least amount of time? So the bee is solving very similar for the bee. It's solving this least distance problem. And what researchers pointed out is that they are solving this problem faster than supercomputers. In fact, one of the friends of Real Science Radio, Don Johnson, in his great DVD called Programming of Life that we sell at our store, he writes in his book, also titled Programming of Life, if the solution for 10 cities takes a supercomputer 10 seconds, a solution for 11 cities would take 110 seconds. For 15 cities, it would take over 1,000 hours.
Wow.
And what they did with bees. These are tiny little bees, like their brain. I don't even know how
I bet they took weeks, months.
They do it as they're flying.
Yeah.
And Fred, the researchers.
On the fly.
The researchers moved the flowers around. They introduced additional flowers while the bee was in transit. And the bee takes into account these new flowers that he could sense, and he just recalculates and continues on his merry way.
That's amazing. This is like serious trigonometry, mega magmatry.
Fred, it turns out, and this is, again, brand new science, ants are helping researchers predict earthquakes.
Isn't that amazing? This is really cool.
Yes. This is a geophysical conference that was held in Vienna this year, 2013, just recently. And one of the researchers has spent 3 years studying these ant mounds, these redwood ant mounds along an earthquake fault in Germany. Fred, she has this researcher, Gabriel Berberich, she has counted more than 15,000 redwood ant mounds, and they line up along Germany's faults. And they say they line up like candy drops on a conveyor belt. And there's a photograph of them, and it's just astounding.
It is. Now, if there's an earthquake, that tells me that the earth is quaking.
Yes.
And lots of, like, ant mounds, they might collapse, right?
They could. The tunnels underground. Fred, if you've ever been in a tunnel, like in Colorado, we have the Eisenhower Tunnel. Mm-hmm. I grew up in northern New Jersey, just 15 minutes from the George Washington Bridge. There's also the Lincoln Tunnel. It would be horrifying to be in the Lincoln Tunnel during an earthquake. Would you want to be deep underground? Like in Turkey, we went to an underground city where the rock is so
soft. I don't like
to
be deep underground anyways.
You don't?
I don't.
Okay.
And I can't imagine being an ant in an earthquake.
No. You'd want, if it's an earthquake, you want to be out of a tunnel. Well, it turns out that they have been videotaping 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They've used video cameras in order to study the behavioral changes of these ants. And they're using special software to help them catalog, sort of artificial intelligent software, to help them track when ants' behavior changes. And what they have found out is about a day before an earthquake above magnitude 2, the ants all skedaddle. They all get out of the colony.
Really?
They go on the surface, and it's dangerous for thousands of ants to amass on the surface because predators will pick them off like crazy.
But they'll head out anyways, because which is worse? I mean, you pick your poison.
Right.
I'd rather be out and taking my chances than to get buried alive.
Yes. Even if you're an ant, you don't want to be buried alive.
That's right. You're clearing out of there.
And so not only do they come out of their colony ahead of the earthquake, but once the earthquake hits, they stay out for about 24 hours. They wait till the all clear signal, and then they say, okay, everybody back in the hole.
Really fast. So this guy speculates, they don't really know why they do this, but hey, we have some ideas here. They speculate that it might be changing gas emissions or maybe a shift in the Earth's magnetic field.
That's one of their speculations. They're saying, we don't know.
Yep.
Maybe they're sensing carbon dioxide or perhaps some disturbance in the electromagnetic field.
Ooh, that sounds interesting. That sounds Walt Brownish.
Yes, Walt Brownish, you're right. Because you and I did a show on the origin of Earth's radioactivity, and Walt Brown, his book, In the Beginning, which we highly recommend, and it's available through our store, and that helps Real Science Radio stay on the air. If anybody wants to get any of our science DVDs, our debates, or books, I think you'll love them. They're the best of the best. Of 1,000 possible resources, we've picked, the top 25 or so. Just tremendous resources. So Walt Brown explains how, in a young Earth, why it is that there's radioactivity, which is dangerous, and the origin of radioactivity. And it turns out that 90% of Earth's radioactivity is in the continents, in the continental crust.
That's not right.
In the mantle. It's not in the outer core, the inner core.
It's at the crust, the top.
It's at the top, and it's not even mostly in the crust under the oceans. It's in the continental crust. Walt Brown's theory explains exactly why that is, because of all the quartz in granite. Quartz is a major component of granite.
Mm-hmm.
And when granite is under pressure, quartz, if there's any type of poling, if it's aligned in any way, not 100%, but just somewhat aligned, it puts out a voltage and it creates this electric field. And so they've noticed not only are ants helping to predict earthquakes now, apparently, this research is ongoing, but they've also found, we've talked about this, that disturbances in the ionosphere over the epicenter of earthquakes seem to be predictors of earthquakes. And Fred, at the same geophysical conference in Vienna, in Austria, in April 2013, we're talking about current science, not only did they look at this ant behavior, but they also said we need to continue to look at the disturbance in the ionosphere above the epicenter of earthquakes because it's real and it's happening.
And maybe that's what ants are detecting.
It could be, right?
It's really interesting. You know, the dino soft tissue thing to me is the number one biggest thing in creation in the last 30 years.
Yeah,
right,
dinosaur
now.
Soft
I
tissue.
Think this radioactivity thing that Walt Brown has proposed really needs to be followed up with by other creation scientists, because to me, it's the most exciting story I've heard in the last year. It's a great theory, and there's so much confirming it. And we have something current just recently that reinforces what he's documented.
So, for example, not only might looking at the ionosphere with our satellites help save millions of lives through early earthquake detection, but it might point researchers in the right direction. They might study, you know, a difference in carbon dioxide gas for 5 years and find out that doesn't go anywhere. It's not what the ants are detecting. But they might be able to mimic a change in the ions that ants are detecting and thereby figure out not only what the ants are doing, but how to save lives. And really, it looks like it's pointing to Walt Brown's hydroplate theory.
That's right. We ought to try to email these people on this ant study and suggest that they try this ionosphere test.
This is Gabriel Berberich. And you know what? She's at the University of Duisburg-Essen in Germany. Fred will do it from Real Science Radio.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, Fred Williams.
Thanks, Bob.
This is Bob Enyer. Our website is realscienceradio.com. The abbreviation, real easy, rsr.org. Just go to rsr.org. You'll see today's show, the show summary. You could email it to a friend, invite somebody to tune in, and also click on the store and purchase some of our science resources, and that'll help us stay on the air, and you'll love it.
You will love it, and it's not as slimy as you think.
That's right. Thank you for that endorsement, Fred Williams, and may God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.
Hi, this is Bob Enyer. At Real Science Radio, we have a great science store online, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store, and there are two fabulous DVDs, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy, Volume 1 and Volume 2. These are by a dear friend of Real Science Radio, Spike Pisaris, and Spike has created simply the greatest astronomy DVDs ever produced. We have gone through hundreds of science DVDs and books, and we recommend only the very best at our store, realscienceradio.com, and you'll love these astronomy DVDs, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy, Volume 1 and Volume 2. You got to get them.